Did she say she teases you?
She was for a year or multiple. I'll come here. Oh, she was.
That's exactly what I was wanting. This is like a
chapters to read for this week. Everybody do their reading. This is the most reading in this book that you'll do. So next, I'll just give you the assignment now. Next week, we are going to read chapters 8 and 9, just two chapters. Next week and the following week, we'll read chapters 10 and 11, then we'll be done with the reading. And we should know everything there is to know about grounded theory and how to code. Pass that around. Just check your name. Check your... Put a checkmark after your name. So these three chapters that you read for today are the most important chapters. Oh, before... Let me pass that back. Sorry. So what I'm going to do is there are, I think, not including Elisa, so there are 11 of you. 12 would be perfect, but there are 11 of you. So what I'm going to do is, to make this work, typically we have groups of four coders according to Auerbach and Silverstein. But what we'll do is we'll break up into groups of two. So we'll have six coders and five coders. Ideally, that's what we're going to do. So what I want you to do is, and if you need more time to think about it, that's fine. But if you have kind of an idea what you want to do, I want you to mark it on here. So on this list of names. So I want you to think about whether you want to be on the Overeaters Anonymous coding team or the Sex Addicts Anonymous coding team. So what you're going to do is you're going to put either an S or an O after your name. And hopefully it'll be roughly evenly distributed, but we'll see what happens. Okay? So now I'll pass this. Let's see what happens. Anyway, these are the three most important chapters of the book that you read for today. I don't know where Elisa is. Oh, she says she's in the waiting room. Just a minute, folks. So what we're doing is you're checking off your name and then you're putting whether you want to be in the Overeaters Anonymous group or the Sex Addicts Anonymous group.
She was. She's not in the bed now.
And yes, she has. She's been doing that.
Hey, there you are. Try to say something. Once again, we can't hear you. I'm sorry. Once again, this is not working. Well, at least you can hear. Eight people want to be in the sex addicts group, and three people want to be in the overeaters group.
I thought I could fix the volume with this.
I have to contact IT yet again. Okay. So. Anybody who is in the S group want to move over to the O group? Anybody would like to do that? Wow.
Convince us why we should go to the U.
I'll be sure to furnish you with lots of food. Kind of punch. Okay, so, I'm going to have to flip a coin and do it that way, because we need roughly balanced groups. So, let's see, we have, in the overeaters group, we have Shana.
Okay.
Oh, no, you, sorry, Dolores.
Yeah.
Vivian and Esther. Three lovely young students. Anyone want to join them? Dolores, Vivian, and Esther.
Is there religion in overeating?
What's that?
Is there religion in the overeating?
Is there
like religious themes in the overeaters?
Well, there are religious themes in both groups because these are both spiritual programs. They both rely on a so-called higher power to help them overcome their addictions. So either one, they're equally spiritual.
I'll go over here.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yes.
Well, yeah, eventually we will. We'll get there eventually. So that gives us 4 and 7. So, be nice to be a one more person. Okay, great. Thank you. Savannah, right?
Yes.
Okay, great. All right, that's much better. Now we have 5 and 6. Great. So this is what we're going to do. Thank you for engaging in this process. What I want us to do is, you know, we're going to be coding 2 sets of transcripts. I mean, I'm calling them transcripts. They're just short stories in these 2 books that I showed you last week. One group is going to be working on the overeaters' stories, and the other group is going to be working on the sex addicts' stories. And you guys are going to have separate processes, and hopefully we're going to have, you know, half of you, when we get there, half of you are going to go into the other room and work, and then the other half are going to work in this room and, you know, review the coding together. So part of the coding, if you read the 3 chapters, this should be all reviewed to you, but I want to make sure it's crystal clear. Part, and Elisa, who is mute, literally and figuratively, she's actually done this coding. And I think you've done the coding, this kind of coding too, right? So you're familiar. Part of the coding is done independently. You do it by yourself, and those are going to be the homework assignments in the future. And then part of the coding is done together as a team, all right? So the part that's done together as a team, we'll use the lab meetings to work on the team-focused aspects of the coding, and then the homework assignments, you'll be doing the independent parts of the coding, okay? So what we're going to do is, everybody clear on that so far? So we have our 2 groups. We kind of know how we're going to use this lab time in the future, not in the next 2 or 3 weeks, but, you know, coming up at some point. We know how we're going to use our homework time as well. And we'll see how that goes. I haven't led one of these kinds of teams in 10, 11 years, but I have my trusty lab coordinator here, Lisa, who's going to whisper in my ear and tell me what I'm doing wrong. So. So what we're going to do is we're going to talk today about how to go about the coding and just review how to do that. And then I think for next week, or maybe later this week, I'm going to assign some practice transcripts for you based on the dissertation that a former student of mine completed last year, actually earlier this year, she defended Taylor Perlman. Actually, Elisa was one of the coders for Taylor's dissertation. And I didn't tell you this, Elisa, but I contacted Taylor and she sent me her final digitized dissertation plus some sample transcripts to code. So we're going to be using her sample to code the transcripts that she sent. We'll be using her sample to code for practice. So if you're on the overeaters team and you decide that you want to write a first authored poster, right, you automatically become the leader of that team. Okay, so what we're going to do is, and that doesn't mean that we're going to have only two posters, one sex addicts and one overeaters. I think what we might do is break the two teams into sub-teams. So then we have four leaders, and each of those leaders would be a poster first offer. If, I don't know who's thinking about a poster, I mean, people have talked to me a little bit, but I don't know exactly who wants to do that. But the poster first author is going to have additional work to do. And I don't mean just writing an abstract. I mean like going home and then sorting through the relevant text, repeating ideas, themes, etc., and putting them into categories, and then coming back to the lab meetings and then using the lab time to review the first author's placements with the rest of the team, and then the rest of the team can say, well, I don't really agree with that. I think it should go here rather than there. Is that really relevant text? You know, and so we use the teamwork as a forum for refining the decisions that the first author made. But the first author is going to have a lot more homework than the rest of the team. So that's part of being a first author, in addition to writing an abstract by early December. So we still have over 2 months, so no worries about that. But there's more. There's going to be homework, more homework. There is, yes, Shane?
How can we write an abstract before we have done the research? Or
if you want to be a first author, you should be actually reading some literature now and coming up with some kind of research concern that you have.
Okay. So, but for the abstract, would we have to have gotten to the end of the, okay, like we would have to report like the results?
No, in fact, I've never had an experience of a student submitting an abstract for a conference in which the research has already been conducted. Okay. It's never happened.
So this is a different kind of abstract than the one that they've been thinking of?
Yeah, you're thinking of an abstract in a journal.
From published, right. Okay.
Right. So this is not that.
Where does this one end?
Huh?
Where does this abstract sort of end?
Where does it end?
Yes, like what is it, what are the components of the abstract that we need? Like right up through identifying a research concern, maybe the...
Well, I think I sent out abstracts from last year and poster, right?
Yes, but I thought that those were like, I thought there was more like completion of the, it was an abstract of a study that had already kind of been...
No, I mean, if that were the case, we wouldn't have had anything to do last spring.
Okay.
Right, because all the coding took place last spring.
I will go back and look at my materials.
Yeah, because I sent everything that everyone would possibly need to know about writing an abstract. I did that a long time ago because I wanted people to have that information so they could start thinking about it.
I scanned it.
You scanned it?
I scanned
it. Oh, okay. All right. No problem. So, so the abstracts don't have to be completed. Results-oriented pieces of artwork, you know, that you hang in the Louvre or you submit to the American psychologist. They're just basically blueprints for what you plan to do. What do you want to do? And what do you expect to get out of it? Now, that's where this abstract is going to differ a little bit, because we don't expect anything. I mean, all we expect is that our research concerns are going to be somehow addressed. What we want to come up with at the end is maybe some hypotheses that have been generated by our process. But we will not know what those hypotheses are until after we've completed this process. It's very different from last year, where we actually started with hypotheses and we were testing the hypotheses to see whether they were supported by the evidence that we collected, right? The data we collected. And we could test them statistically, and you know, if those of you who did that last year, you know what I'm talking about. Any questions at this point? So what the end point will be hypotheses that we can then firmly state based on this process that we're going to be going through. But by December, you know, if we begin coding at all, we probably will. We're just starting the coding. We're not going to be finished by then. So there's no way that we're going to have a completed abstract for the APA by the due date. And I have no expectation that's going to happen in the 23 years at LIU and the 1 year at Emory. That's never happened, where we had a completed project for the abstract. That's how most people work when they submit abstracts or posters. That's why it's a poster. There's no pressure, right? If you're submitting for a journal article, obviously the whole thing has to be completed, but not for a poster. That's not the expectation. All right?
In my mind, that sounds like a proposal.
Yeah, it's exactly what it is, a proposal.
Okay.
It's a blueprint for what you promise to accomplish. It's a proposal, that's a good word to use. So the abstract is more like a proposal, what you propose to do for your poster when that time eventually comes.
Gotcha.
All right. So what I want you guys to do, those of you who want to do first author posters, be reading about your topic, be reading about your research concern. You know, I think if we have a research concern, you know, that's good enough. We have these two books with the stories already. There's no need to transcribe or anything. That's all done. And I'm going to ask Karen and Carolina, how are things? Have you got the books yet, or starting to convert them into PDFs, or how's that going? I don't mean to put you on the spot, but.
Well, we have a couple of exams and like papers this week, but this is like our free week coming up. So
okay,
we're
great,
focusing
great.
On that this
great.
Weekend.
So what we might want to do is just to give people an idea, maybe, that's what I could do, because I actually do have a couple of these stories already in PDF form, so that's on me. I will send some of these out, just so you get a sense of what these stories entail. In fact, I think I have two each. I have two OA stories and two SAA stories. Now, some of that, actually, Justin, you've already read them for the class. Let me make a note to myself to do that, so that those of you who want to do first author posters, you know, you can kind of like see, okay, what's here? What can I make of this material? Okay, so I made that note to myself. So once you have four, and the SA people and the OA people, you'll all get all four. Okay, so you get maximum number of examples. And if you wanna, if you really don't like, if you sign up for OA and you really don't like it, maybe you can trade with somebody who really doesn't like SAA after you've read the stories. But I do want to keep 5 and 6 if possible. But I want people to feel locked in if they really, really don't like the addiction they've chosen. All right.
I'm just thinking about how an overeater, you know, an overeating addiction could be the result of some sexual trauma in the past.
Well,
that's
sure,
sort of,
and
you know,
and
there's sort of yeah.
Yeah, and it's. These aren't mutually exclusive. You can have two addictions. But for the purposes of this this project, I'm almost certain that the story that you'll read, whether it's a sex addict writing it or an overeater writing it, they won't talk, if at all, very much about other addictions. they're going to focus exclusively on the addiction that we're talking about. Now, occasionally they might say, I also have problems with pills and alcohol. But it's going to be in passing. It's not going to be the focus of the story. Mm-hmm. So we won't know if the person is cross-addicted to the other addiction that we're that we're studying. Okay. But you're right, that is a possibility, but we won't know that. We
well,
won't
the ideology of, you know, the overeating as a response to doing something to the shape of one's body to mitigate the impact of, you know, some stuff.
Yes. See, now this is where it would be helpful if we had actually collected our own data. Because that would be a question you could ask somebody, right?
Yeah.
So you have an overeater in front of you and you're interviewing them for this project. You could say, tell me about any sexual trauma you might have experienced in a childhood and how that might have affected your eating habits.
Mm-hmm.
And then they
sure.
can just...
We'll just have to look and see if there's some kind of a repeating idea in here. You know, if that were your research concern. I don't know, maybe.
Yes. Correct,
mm-hmm.
correct. But I can tell you that because we didn't collect our own data, that's not going to be something we're going to know.
Okay.
So that would be a research concern that I don't think would work.
Well, good. I'm glad it's not my research concern.
So I'll send these stories out. You can read them and be thinking about research concerns that you might have that you want to work on. I tell you, it'd be interesting. So I'm interested in spiritual tools. Like, what are the tools, or what's the spiritual connection that helped these people stop their behavior? I think, Justin, that's something we share an interest in that. We're both a camper, so we both have that interest. Another interesting topic would be something along the lines of what Taylor, my student, did. So she looked at the phenomenon of hitting rock bottom. What did that look like? When did a person know they hit rock bottom? How did that look for them? And if we did that in the sex addicts group, and we did that in the overeaters group, we'd actually then pull in her findings from it was alcohol, right? At least it wasn't drugs at all, it was only alcohol. Yeah, so she looked at only alcohol, and then we could look at a substance addiction to alcohol as compared to process or behavioral addictions to sex and food and see what the differences and the similarities. So that would be another interesting, but I'm not trying to persuade anybody, if that is an interest of yours, what hitting rock bottom looks like in a sex addict or in an overeater, that's great. If you don't, if that's not an interest, that's fine as well. But what I am thinking of is, if we have subgroups, each subgroup could explore that particular leader's research concern. Okay? Alternatively, we could not have subgroups, just have the sex addicts group and the overeaters group. And the relevant text would be anything related to any of the research concerns that people within the group have. That would be an alternative way of doing it. It's hard for me to decide because I don't know how many of you want to do first author posters. If it's only a couple of people, then you know there's not an issue. But if there's like lots of people, maybe we just keep it, you know, a single group for each behavioral addiction. So be thinking about this. I do want to start here maybe this week. Email me if you're definitely interested in a research concern. If you don't email me this week, that won't mean that you're not in the running to be a first author. As I said before, and I say it every single week, regardless of whether you're a first author on a poster or not, everybody in this room gets their name on every poster that's created by this group. And that includes if you're a sex addict group member, you get your name on the overeater group poster, and vice versa. Everybody's names goes on everybody's posters, because at the end, we're actually going to be comparing notes from the two groups. So everybody's going to have input on every poster. So don't feel left out if you're not a first author. I mean, it's nice if you are, but if you're not, believe me, just having your name on a poster as an undergraduate or even a grad student, you know, it's a big deal. It's going to look great for when you apply for grad school in whatever mental health field you want to enter. If you're going for American literature, I don't know that this would be that helpful, but in the mental health field, it would mean a lot to see that you've had your name, you're productive, that you've conducted some research, you've gotten your feet wet, you know, you have several posters under your belt, or even just one under your belt is great. Elisa had at least one poster under your belt when you applied to Columbia, right? How many did you have? Just two. Two or one, one or two. Right, so she had only one or two, and she got into one of the best schools in the country. So, you know, two of you, four of you in this group already have four posters under your belt. So, you guys rock. Email me this week. Just let me know your intentions. That's not locking you in. It's not locking you other people out. But I just want to kind of get a ballpark sense of where people are at with that. Someone asked me already, can I do two posters? No. One poster. One poster per person. Okay, so we've got a good half hour. Let me talk about the mechanics, and Elisa, maybe you can text me if I get something wrong. I have my phone right here. I'm gonna open it up to Elisa. Oh, you already texted me something. You can tell all the students that I would be happy to share any advice or answer any questions about writing or creating an abstract if they want to email me, because Elisa was one of the first authors last year, as was Charles, as was Daniel. So I'm sure you guys are also available to answer questions.
Sure.
Yes, Charles? Okay. You didn't seem too excited about that, but that's all right. but Elise is happy to answer questions. And she has the benefit of being the lab coordinator and also being in grad school, so she's especially good to ask. So you have your story in front of you. You're in you're at home. You've got the story. And you also now, I'm pretending this is ahead of it. This is in advance. You have your story. You know the research concerns that you're looking for. So you start highlighting text in the document. And I'm hoping, Carolina and Karen, that these PDFs are going to be highlightable. I don't know if they are. Do you know whether they will be? Okay, or maybe there's a way to convert the PDFs then into Word, which is definitely highlightable, so keep that in mind. What I'm going to be sending you guys out, the four stories I do have in PDF form, they're only in PDF, but we're not going to be highlighting them yet anyways, just for you to get a sense of what these stories are all about and to get some ideas about research concerns. So you're going to be highlighting the relevant text, okay? You go to the next story, you highlight relevant text. You keep going through all the stories that you've been assigned for that week, right? Then we're going to do the following week. You're going to have more stories and more stories. So In each group, altogether, you're going to have 40-something stories. And these stories really vary in length. Some of them are like 2 pages. It's very brief. Others are more like 6-7 pages. Not very much more than 6 or 7 pages. They're relatively short. This isn't like massive amounts of data to go through. What?
I remember when we had to analyze like 50 pages of psycho.
Exactly. So Daniel will tell you what it's like when you got a one psychotherapy transcript that's 50 pages long, and you've got to Q-sort that. It's painful. One transcript took 6 hours or more.
Oh yes, even more than that.
Yeah. So this is a piece of cake compared to that. But I don't mean to put you guys down for what you're doing. This is going to be really exciting, I think, what we're going to extract from this. So then you get all your relevant text, right? And I guess we could just do this by story. So you take your first relevant text from story one. Then you go through the rest of the relevant text pieces that you've highlighted, right? And you find any other relevant text that seems to go along or hang together with that first relevant text, right? So you create a new document called Repeating Ideas, Story One, or however you want to label that second document. You copy and paste that first relevant text into that second document, right? And then you copy and paste any other relevant text that seems to be thematically related to the first relevant text. When you find a relevant text like that, you copy and you paste into that new document. All right, and you do that for the rest of the story. Then you go to the next unhighlighted relevant text and move that over to the same second document, only you label it repeating idea number two. Then you repeat the process, and you look for the next relevant text that has anything to do with that second relevant text that hadn't been selected in the first round. Okay? If you find something, you highlight it, and then you move it over to the second repeating idea, and you just keep following this. And actually, what I'm describing is really the process for everything that follows. Am I right, Elisa? Yeah, so I'm just keeping this open for you in case you need to tell me anything. So then you have, in the second document, you have a bunch of repeating ideas. Now, there might be some relevant text that doesn't go with anything else. There's no other relevant text that matches with it thematically. Do you remember what the name is for that? Thank you, Justin. Orphan text. So orphan text, we're going to save in a separate file. So all the orphan texts, we're going to open up and save in a separate file. You can call it orphan text story one. And we'll just save them there for a rainy day. All right. Then you go to story two, and you repeat the same process in story two. All right. Again, putting orphan text in this other kind of recycling bin called orphan text, and you go through all the stories like that. And maybe we'll just do like maybe 10 per week, so that after a month, we will have gone through all the stories, pretty much all of them. Then, this is where the first author is going to come in handy. So, but I want everybody to do this, though. Everybody then is going to look at their, for each week. For week one, you would have worked stories 1 through 10. take your repeating ideas out from stories 1 through 10 and see whether there are some repeating ideas maybe in story 4 that go along with repeating ideas in story 1, and then you start combining them. Right? So then you have a bunch of repeating ideas that include all 10 stories. And then you go to, then we'll do stories 11 through 20, and we'll combine the repeating ideas in stories 21 to 30, and then stories 31 to 40 something. And we'll do the same process. Is that how Taylor did it, Elisa, or is this slightly different? Maybe you can text me. Generally getting the mechanics of this. It's basically, it's not queue sorting, but it's sorting. It's a form of sorting. You can't get away from it.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Unfortunately. Okay, she says we did things pretty similar to how you're saying. Okay, great. Yeah,
so it can't be wrong.
Huh?
It can't really be wrong.
That's true. So in Q-sorting, we're checking reliability very closely. And so, you know, I would come in and referee. But in this, you know, nobody's really wrong. But that's when we get together and we talk about repeating ideas, there might be some disagreements, but they're resolved not by who's right and who's wrong, but by consensus. Like, can we all agree that maybe this repeating idea, or this relevant text, maybe belongs in a different repeating idea than the one it was originally placed in. Or maybe, you know, let's say you and Charles are in the same team, and you placed one relevant text in one repeating idea, and Charles placed it in somewhere else. Maybe we could have you two talk about where it might really belong. Maybe it belongs in a totally different third repeating idea. So there's some room for negotiation, and, you know, in a smoke-filled room. You know, so. Some people got it. Anyway, so we'll have some negotiations going on, and it's going to be lots of fun. All right. So then, oh yeah, Justin.
So I'm confused about, so the research concern or narrow or looking. Like
that's what. So ideally, that's what constrains what relevant text means.
Right.
The meaning of relevant text depends on the research concern.
If we have like both the overeaters that I'm with, we all want to be a primary author. We're all not going to be looking for the same ideas.
You are. So that's why we need to establish what the research concerns are ahead of before. And believe me, there's no rush because we're actually doing some practice on Taylor's interviews. They're not really interviews. Well, they are interviews, but she didn't do them. She got them from a podcast called The Bubble Hour. But anyway, we'll practice this this week, I hope. But when the time comes that we're really coding the data, everybody in the team will know all the research concerns. And so all the relevant text will depend on all the research concerns. Yes, so you're all coding for everybody's poster in your group. Obviously you're not coding for if you're in the overeaters group, you're not coding for the sex addicts group and vice versa, but you're coding for all the research concerns within your particular addiction.
Thank you.
All right, yeah, that's a good question. Yes.
So how do we determine like the discriminability between ideas? So that, like the one idea is saying one thing, but it's also not the same as the other idea, but it's the same thing.
It's subjective. That's why it's called qualitative, not quantitative.
Okay.
So it's that's where the negotiation comes in. Like, does it really belong in this category? No, it really belongs in that category, but it actually belongs in a third category we haven't even thought about yet. Or maybe it's really orphan text. It needs to be in the orphan text file. Okay? It's some people like this better because, you know, there's not so much pressure to be right all the time. Other people don't like it. Those people like prefer to have certainty in their lives. And so they don't like this kind of wishy-washy kind of, well, it could be this, it could be that. So different people's personalities kind of gravitate toward one or the other type of research.
Yeah, because that's one of the things that the quantitative research is really focused on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's why we're not testing hypotheses, though. We're only generating them. So once we've generated a hypothesis, then we can give it to the quantitative people to test.
Right. But there's like a, like we use words for the hypotheses. Those words have like a shared meaning across
the research. Correct.
So like my theory is that like we use a word for something, but it actually means like another thing and kind of like ruins the system.
Well, that's why Auerbach and Silverstein make it very clear they, as much as possible, to use the words used by the participants. At every step of the way, try to use the words that the participants use. Now, you're going to say, well, what if we don't understand the word the participant used? That's possible. I can't rule it out. But these stories were written for a very common audience. These stories are not written for an academic audience. There's no technical jargon used. It's used for your average, everyday Joe Schmo on the street who is suffering from addiction. So it's written for someone at the lowest common denominator.
But it's self-reported, right?
It's self-reported.
But then how do you know if they actually hit that? That's the question.
They're going to give you examples of what they went through, like actual behavioral examples. Now, are they lying? I guess they could be lying. But if they said, I ate 5 pounds of cheesecake in a 45-minute period, do they think they have a problem?
Yeah.
So,
maybe not a overeating problem. Maybe it's just a cheesecake problem.
Well, that's not going to be the only example.
Right.
They're going to give you a whole litany of behaviors that they engaged in prior to hitting rock bottom.
So this is when they got these participants, right, or these patients, did they fill out like a questionnaire or anything, or were like breaking them up?
This is not a research study. This is an org. So let me tell you what these organizations are. These are 12-step programs.
Okay.
These are nonprofit organizations founded by sufferers and participated in by sufferers. It's a program for and by sufferers of these addictions. There is no therapists involved. There are no professionals involved. It's completely, you've heard of the self-help movement. This is the self-help movement. This is like, AA is the beginning of the self-help movement in this country. Right? So these are people who just needed help, and they didn't know where to turn, and so they turned to each other for help.
Was there like a criteria for the stress or impairment?
The criterion is if you feel that you need to recover from that addiction, then you're a member.
Okay.
Self-identified addiction. So if you think you are addicted, I think it's assumed that you qualify. If you see yourself or you recognize yourself to be out of control of this thing.
Yeah, so if you create a hypothesis, right, and it's supposed to be about the sex addicts, but it's like self-reported, right? What if it's like measuring like something else, or it's a hypothesis for something else, right?
And that would be a limitation of your research study.
Because then you lack in the internal validity.
Well, it's kind of a subjective thing.
Okay, so here's the AA. This is tradition number 3. The only requirement for AA membership, AA stands for Alcoholics Anonymous, okay? The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. That's it.
Mm. That's interesting, because not, you know, when you get up at a meeting, you're supposed to say, I'm so-and-so and I'm an alcoholic. That's a little different.
Well,
I mean, that's a quite a statement.
You see, you're an alcoholic. If you have a desire to stop drinking, you can't.
Yeah.
You can't stop.
That's right.
Right?
Well, but they don't say that here.
Huh?
They just say a desire to stop drinking and an acknowledgement of our.
You don't, but that's not a requirement for membership.
Gotcha.
So you can be, you can come in drunk to a meeting. You can still, but you're still considered a member.
That's right. And then
you're drinking your ass off, but you're still a member.
Might stand up and say, like, okay, I don't have a drink. Right, like you can come for a while. In church. Oh,
yes, yes. So I'm drunk off my ass, but I have a desire to stop drinking. You're a member. All right? So,
well,
I know if that helps you.
The way that we do, there's criteria that you're going to meet so that you are like in that group, you know? Like, for example, if it's like a diagnosis, if all these symptoms, you meet like a certain amount.
That's how this is.
Yeah,
well,
right.
You're thinking
very psychiatrically. This is not psychiatry.
I don't know.
I think it would be interesting, though, to like, we read the stories and see what commonalities there are. For these people tell these stories, what do they have in common as to why they think they qualify for this?
Yeah, I mean, I had a discussion.
Maybe that's your research concern.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things I talked with you about, right? Like, you know, like if there's like a pattern between the participant and group. Then
yeah. So somehow try to formulate that as a concern. And then when I send you these stories this week, you can read them and see whether there might be something there that you, some relevant text that might speak to your research concern.
It seems to me like I have to like read it all before I sort of know.
You
I mean,
read
I have
them all?
You bought them. I did. I feel like, are we the
well,
only
once you
with, like,
once you read like 10 to 20, then you really got everything.
That's right. I know. Well,
yes.
So I have a research concern, but then when I get into the reading, even a little bit, I'm like, oh, maybe this should be my research concern. Like, maybe something different should be my research concern.
I mean, you want to narrow it down eventually to one.
Well, I think the one I have is broad enough. Like, it's what's the role of human relationship in achieving recovery would be something very, very broad.
Perfect. That works.
Yeah. Or, you know, recovery from sex addiction. You know.
I like that because it contrasts with what Justin's interested in. He's interested in the spiritual aspect. You're interested in the human interaction aspect.
That's right. The corporeal.
Yes,
know.
The corporeal.
Yes.
Exactly.
Cool.
So you two's ideas are complementary. You're not, but they're not overlapping, which I like.
All right. Okay. All right. So I'll keep it kind of raw for the moment.
Yeah. We got 15 minutes. Okay. So that's for relevant text. Then you got your repeating ideas. And then you just repeat, rinse and repeat, right? You treat the repeating ideas as if they were relevant text. And then the repeating ideas, by the way, should be like perfectly chosen actual words that one of the participants used that kind of captures the entire repeating idea. Like a quote from one of the stories, doesn't matter which one, but it should be like encapsulate what that repeating idea is all about. So it should be a quote. Then you take the first repeating idea, right, and open up a third document, right, and you copy and paste that repeating idea into it. Then you look for any other repeating ideas that are thematically related to the first repeating idea. If you read the examples from the Haitian Father study, those are like really great examples or illustrations of what they're talking about. You find another repeating idea that seems to match or correspond, copy, paste that into your third document. Keep doing that until you get to the bottom of the list. So that's a theme. Theme one. Theme two. Okay, go down through the list. Where's the first repeating idea that you didn't use already? Take that one, copy and paste it into theme number two. Now, look for all the unhighlighted repeating ideas and see which one might go along with or hang together with this repeating idea that you just copied and pasted into theme two. Oh, there's one. Copy, paste into theme two. Keep doing that until you get to the end of the document. Then you go to the top of the document again. Look for the first unhighlighted repeating idea that you find. That becomes the beginning of theme three. Rinse and repeat. Now, they recommend, Auerbach and Silverstein recommend, I think it's 40 repeating ideas and 10 to 15 themes. Am I right about that?
Yeah, it's like 40 to 60.
Let me see.
And then you divide the number of repeating ideas by four, so you would have.
Yes, I think you're right about that, didn't you? Yeah, so how many repeating ideas should you come up with? There are no hard and fast rules, but we have found that something in the neighborhood of 60 is a workable number with a minimum of 40 and a maximum of 80. So they're looking for 60. But these are just ballpark figures, okay? And then for themes, I think you're right, so it'd be like 15.
Yeah.
If you divide by four. So each theme should have about four repeating ideas, roughly.
Does that seem a bit, sorry, here I go. I mean, does that seem a bit arbitrary, though? Shouldn't
it is
you just
arbitrary,
listen
of course.
To the data and just let the data decide how many of the things there are?
The problem with just listening to the data, and I'm sympathetic to that, but the problem is that, and Auerbach and Silverstein talk about this, you know, we have a lot of different personalities in this room.
Mm-hmm.
So there are lumpers and splitters in this room. Okay? I'm more of a splitter. I'm like very analytical. And if I were to do this on my own, I would like have loads and loads of repeating ideas unchecked. Because I split.
I
others of us are lumpers, right? So you see patterns in a lot of seemingly disparate data, which is also a very valuable skill to have. And so you might have like only 10 repeating ideas because everything looks similar to you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the reason why Auerbach and Silverstein are recommending ballpark estimates for repeating ideas and themes is that we have all different personalities in this room and we attack this project in many different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And so we want the sweet spot, which for them is like 60 or so repeating ideas and 15 or so themes.
So if I went through and I only got like 10 or something, then I might say, okay, I need to go look again or try to
and
find
be more discriminatory,
more.
Yes.
Okay.
Right. So, but you're right, the data should lead us at every step, but at the same time, our personalities determine in some ways what we consider, you know, similar themes versus disparate themes. But this is part of what the negotiation process is going to be like when we get to that point. Elisa, am I right so far in everything I've said? Okay, all right, good. And then you have your themes, and you do the same process, rinse and repeat, to get your theoretical constructs. Once you get your theoretical constructs, you can write a narrative based on each theoretical construct. And I think three or four theoretical constructs, is that what I remember?
I don't remember how many.
Okay, something like that. I don't remember how many theoretical constructs Taylor had. Do you remember, Elisa, for her dissertation? Hold up the finger. Not the middle finger. Five. She had five constructs? Okay. So somewhere in the neighborhood, so I guess we're reducing them, the themes, by a factor of three. So from 15 to five would be reducing by a factor of three. So then you have like three constructs, then or five constructs, and then you have like five. You write a narrative around that construct. And so then you have your narratives, and then you're done. Those narratives should really tell you something about your 40-something stories and tell you something that we didn't know before. And then a testable a testable hypothesis should just jump out at you or emerge from at least one of those theoretical narratives that you can then include like in your poster presentation. And I sent you a poster presentation that my students did in Grounded Theory back in 2013, I think. Way before your time, Elisa, you were a zygote then. but we identified the themes and the constructs and all that, and it should be in that poster, and you can see how that worked out. And I also sent you a journal article that I wrote with Felita, my wife, where we did Grounded Theory as well, and that's actually a finished product where we actually published that. But that's also Grounded Theory. Those are the two experiences I've had with doing Grounded Theory, the poster with the students and this article with Felita. But from time and again, I've been on dissertation committees like Taylor's, where she did a qualitative study. I had a student back in 2009 or 10 who conducted a qualitative study. So I was on her committee, so I sort of know this stuff, but it's been a while. So I'm so glad that Elisa's here, and it's Vivian? You're Vivian, Esther, sorry. That Esther's here, who's been involved with this type of research before, so that you can correct me when I steer off course. Any questions about this mechanics? Because this is what you're going to be doing for the next several months. Yes.
So highlights a document, and they send their own version of the document into a folder?
No, you're going to keep it to yourself. And then we're going to come together as a team, as you know, the SAA team and the OA team, and then you're going to open up your documents on your laptops, and you're going to hash it out together. But the leader or leaders of that team are going to be leading the meeting, leading their team, I should say, through the meeting.
I wonder if you can do a shared document, share with everybody. But then like a program where if you highlight,
yeah,
right, and at the end you can see how many people highlighted this.
In Google Docs?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, maybe. I'm not a tech expert, but if you wanted to work on that, Dan, then that would be helpful.
Yeah, I know there's something called Perusal, I think one class I took, there was a professor, yeah, the book that he was working on, that's the textbook he used for the class. And he wanted comments on it when people read through
oh, wow.
errors and stuff. So what the Perusal does is that people highlight and comment, but also tells you how many other people highlighted the same thing.
Interesting.
But the thing is, you want to hide the highlight, right? So like, if I were to enter a document,
you want to hide it until the time of the meeting.
Right.
So we do need some independence, at least initially.
Yeah. Yeah. So that, I don't know if there's a way to do that, but I gotta think of how to do that.
All right. We'll think about it.
But, yeah.
But
otherwise, I feel like it could take like a really long time just like seeing who has the same highlights and stuff.
Right.
But
that's why we're going to break it up into chunks. Like, I think we're going to do 10 stories at a time rather than do all 40 at once.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's too much. Also, another interesting idea I had was that there, I will say this, you know, in the era of AI, and I'm curious, how many of you had professors on their syllabi mention something about AI? Just 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, so about half of you. You know, this is a big issue that the faculty are talking about. I know at Candler, we spent a lot of time talking about it during the faculty retreat last month. But there is a program that does exactly what you're going to be doing. It's called InVivo. And you've heard of it, does now.
Yeah.
So I'm curious whether we go through this process as a team, and then we have InVivo do exactly the same thing, and then we compare the human output to the InVivo output and see how different or similar it might be. That's an idea I had. That would be a poster right there, I think.
Yeah.
right? So,
they talk about it in here too.
They do mention Inigo in there, yeah. So it's been around a while. I mean, this book was published in 2003. That's 20 years ago. So Inigo was around 20 years ago. Now it's really improved, I'm sure. But so that was an idea that we're doing this manually. We have humans doing this, but there's also a machine that can do it. And what are the differences and similarities between having humans do it and having a machine do it? That would also be a poster if someone wanted to run with that. I got too much on my plate to be a first author, but. All right, any questions? So I owe you guys action steps. I owe you guys the four stories that have already been PDF'd, if I can use it as a verb. I'll send those to you. I'll also send to you some sample interviews to code for relevant text for next week. And so that'll be due next week, okay? And please send me your relevant text on by Monday night. So it's the same way I did it last year for a lab. So Monday night, send me the relevant text and read the four stories that I'll be sending. And those of you who have an interest in being a first author on a poster, just send me something. I won't hold you to it. If you back out, that's fine. And if you decide not to send me anything but want to be a first author later, that's fine too. But just, I want to know just in general who might have an interest in that and what your research concern might be at this juncture. Okay? All right, see you next week. Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm going to contact IT and try to figure this out, okay? All right, thanks so much. Bye-bye.